Myself, Ann, and Jake are on the committee that's here, so what do we do to make a quorum?
We could probably use Amy.
Can we use Amy and Tom?
We want Bates.
Okay.
By popular demand.
Well, good morning. I'd like to call the MTC Planning Committee meeting to order, and so we do establish a quorum. We're going to deputize our chair, Amy Wirth, and Tom. Bates from Berkeley, and so that'll be our voting membership this morning. So if the secretary can confirm we do have a quorum.
You do have a quorum?
Yeah, I'd like to ask everyone to please join me in the pledge for a flag. Well, I've got the honor of doing our compensation announcement this morning, and you all know this is a Christmas and holiday season, and we all need to be thankful, and I know our commissioners are all thankful you're receiving $100 a day, and you're going to be truly blessed if you can receive up to $500, but I want you to all be generous when you go buy those kettles and people ringing those bells, so make sure that you share that wealth and that compensation and be very generous in holiday season. A lot of people need our help and assistance. And so with that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. These are items that require little or no discussion. We only have the minutes from our November 14th meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Hearing none. If there's no opposition, that motion passes unanimously. Carolyn, are you ready to go? This is we have information items today, and climate adaptation pilot study. And Carolyn and Stephanie, you both presenting this? So.
Yes.
Okay. Carolyn,
good morning,
you kicking
commissioners.
Off?
Yes, I'll kick it off. I'm Carolyn Clevenger with the MTC's planning section. Today, it's pretty timely given the events this week. We'll be presenting some results of a study we've been working on with the Bay Conservation Development Commission, Caltrans District 4, and BART on developing adaptation strategies to address the risks and vulnerabilities associated with sea level rise. As you might recall, when we adopted Plan Bay Area, this was one of the areas identified as a priority work item for all of the agencies. And this was one of the pilot project funded by FHWA that builds on some work we did back in 2011. It's one of many studies underway that will inform the update to the next RTP. And I'll be turning it over to Stephanie Holm from MTC, who is the project manager, and Lindy Lowe from BCDC, who's with us today, who leads their overall Adapting to Rising Tides project.
Know that by now. Hello, good morning, committee members. The first slide that we wanted to present to you today has to do with the context within which this study was developed and then conducted. A lot of the projects that are being conducted around the region are actually related to this project or built information that this project used. Some of the foundational projects for the current study were the Federal Highway Administration first phase, where we did a vulnerability assessment in Alameda County, and then this project actually focused in on the findings of that vulnerability assessment. This project also is built from the Adapting to Rising Tides pilot project, which was conducted in Alameda County and analyzed 12 asset categories, including transportation. And then a foundational project for all of those projects was our partnership with Alameda County Flood Control, where we developed the mapping and analysis and assessment for the shoreline vulnerability. So all of those projects were very coordinated together, developed in concert with one another, and built not only information, but also capacity for all the agencies that have been working around the region. We're starting a number of new initiatives around the region in San Mateo County and Contra Costa County. There's a project in Benicia, and many of those projects are being conducted in a similar fashion using similar information with similar partners. And it's been great to have the Metropolitan Transportation Commission as a partner on this project.
That's the advantage of losing all these commissioners.
Stephanie Hom with MTC's planning section. So as Lindy mentioned, we did a phase one of the FHWA pilot. The first FHWA pilot, it was completed in November 2011 and was a partnership between MTC, BCDC, and Caltrans. Based on a competitive process, the Alameda County shoreline was selected as a study area, included a vulnerability and risk analysis for the shoreline at 16 inches of sea level rise and 55 inches, and it identified vulnerable and at-risk infrastructure. The second FHWA pilot kicked off in November 2013, and it continues work from the first pilot to further refine our understanding of vulnerability and assessment and move towards finding solutions for adaptation strategies to protect our core transportation assets. This includes an analysis and methodology for refining sea level rise and storm event exposure, leveraging work done by the Alameda County Flood Control District, developing a suite of adaptation options appropriate for multiple transportation modes and surrounding land uses, and also taking into account community values, ecological assets, and local economies. Further refining five of those adaptation options as case studies and how they could be conceptually be implemented, and the development of evaluation criteria to help select and prioritize adaptation strategies. The climate change impacts that are studied include sea level rise and extreme weather events. Sea level rise is generally considered a permanent condition and refers to frequent or permanent inundation, increased shoreline erosion, and wave overtopping of shoreline protection, and elevated groundwater levels and salinity. Extreme weather events are considered as more temporary conditions and refer to more frequent short-term flooding. However, extreme weather events are expected to occur more frequently, and today's floods are expected to be the future's high tides. So to better understand risk and vulnerability in the study area, we conducted a more refined sea level rise analysis. This matrix displays water levels associated with sea level rise and extreme tide scenarios. Oftentimes, we're concerned about the timing of a certain water level. Research has indicated that the bay could rise by as much as 24 inches by mid-century and as much as 60 inches by the end of century, but it's also important to understand that different water level scenarios can occur due to a variety of conditions. For example, if we look at the 24 inches of water level, which is highlighted in orange in this matrix, we can see that the different scenarios at which 24 inches of water level could occur at 24 inches of sea level rise, which is considered a permanent condition. A one-year extreme tide event with 12 inches of sea level rise, which would be a temporary condition. A two-year extreme tide event with 6 inches of sea level rise, or a five-year extreme tide event with no sea level rise. So using this approach, it's possible to assess flood risk to assets at various time scales and frequency of flooding. So one of the first steps of our project was to conduct a more refined sea level rise mapping, which is shown here for the Bay Bridge focus area, which is one of the three focus areas that we studied in our study. The core transportation assets for this area include the Bay Bridge Toll Plaza and the Transbay 2. This area is shown at 36 inches of sea level rise, or using the matrix in the last slide, it could show 36 inches of permanent inundation all the way through zero sea level rise or a 50-year tide event. The second focus area is the Hayward focus area, which includes the State Route 92, San Mateo Toll Plaza, the Bay Trail, and a significant amount of ecological assets. This map shows the area at 48 inches of sea level rise, or the scenarios listed at the top right. Our third focus area was the Coliseum focus area, and the core assets that we focused on here include the BART Airport Connector, the Oakland Coliseum BART Station, 880, and the Amtrak Station. And this map also shows it at 48 inches of sea level rise, or again, the scenarios listed at the top right. After a refined understanding of vulnerability and risk, we developed a suite of 124 adaptation strategies that would protect the core assets in the three focus areas. From this list of 124 strategies, we narrowed it down to 5 strategies for detailed analysis to better understand what it would take to actually implement an adaptation strategy. We evaluated the strategies using a series of assessments and weighing their impacts on the environment, equity, the economy, and governance, and understanding their trade-offs if we take no action. So the 5 adaptation strategies that we ended up selecting represent the different focus areas and their strategy types. These include a levee at Radio Beach, a breakwater offshore Radio Beach, a dam and slough levee, a State Route 92 drainage study, and a framework for mainstreaming climate change into transportation agencies. Detailed descriptions, conceptual sketches, rough construction and O&M costs, partners and regulatory issues are also identified for each of these strategies. So the first 2 strategies are the levee and breakwater offshore Radio Beach, and this would protect the Bay Bridge focus areas. These 2 strategies would really be done in tandem to protect the Toll Plaza area. One of the strategies would be a levee along Radio Beach, and the other strategy would be an offshore breakwater, which would protect against wave overtopping and wave erosion and reduce wave heights. Together, the strategies will protect the Toll Plaza area from inundation and flooding, wave overtopping, and wave erosion. We also did some very high-level cost estimates to get an idea of what it would cost the region if these assets failed and were unprotected. That's estimated to be about $15 million a day. For the Coliseum focus area, we looked at putting in 2 levees to protect I-880, the BART station, Amtrak, and the surrounding area where the city of Oakland is planning for a significant amount of growth. The levee designs can be flexible and can be constructed to accommodate different heights in the future. In the Hayward focus area, drainage pathways and the interrelationship between the San Mateo-Hayward Bridge touchdown, they're not very well understood, including the response to drainage system to rising sea levels. So a drainage study would help understand which adaptation strategies would be appropriate in this area. So the framework for mainstreaming climate change into transportation agencies, this would provide approaches to mainstreaming climate change and getting the conversation started through different functional areas of an agency, such as planning, capital development, operations, and administration. For this project, the strategy primarily focused on BART and Caltrans as case studies. So we actually just submitted our final report to FHWA yesterday, and it's also available on MTC's website. Some of the findings that we learned are that multi-agency and multi-asset partnerships are important to find strategies that provide multiple benefits. Refined mapping and analysis is needed, as well as accessible and quality information. And with so many different agencies and assets involved, there's a clear lack of authority on multi-jurisdictional issues, as well as a clear lack of a champion to advocate for these issues. And related to that, there is also just a lack of funding to further these issues. For our next steps, we plan on continuing work with our partner agencies to further develop the work that was done as part of this pilot, as well as focusing on other areas of the region. We'll also be integrating sea level rise into the 2017 Plan Bay Area update and are interested in working with our partner agencies to support any legislation to advocate climate change planning. With that, we'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Can you put 15 back up there?
15?
Can you expand on this mainstreaming climate change into transportation agencies? What does this mean when we actually start talking about projects or we talk about the maintenance? What does this mean? And both on the short term and long term?
I think that's what this strategy is really trying to get to. It's we don't really know that yet, but just getting the conversation started for these agencies. For example, BART, when they started talking about their seismic planning, Now it's integrated into almost every aspect of their agency, of what they do. Do you want to?
I guess the other important thing about the idea of mainstreaming climate change into either agencies or existing practices is doing it throughout, maintenance and operations, when you're determining where funding is going to go, when you're developing new projects, when you're retrofitting old projects. So that it's another issue that is considered as all of the other issues are considered. And so you're not developing a whole new project or report that sits on the shelf, but it's something that you incorporate into the plans, projects, programs that you already do.
So how does all this, you know, when I look at this picture of the Oakland Coliseum, it seems to me that we're building all these little islands all over the place. You're going to have all this flooding if you have it, and you're going to have all these little pockets, these little islands. And so who's going to coordinate all of, you know, if Bart's doing something, somebody else is doing something. I mean, this has all got to be coordinated so we don't end up with these pockets of, and I don't know, Steve. And Steve, the other thing I'd like you to touch on is how you see this affecting transportation funding, maybe in the short term and long term.
I wish you were asking some easier questions, Mr. Chairman, but I'm glad you are asking the hard ones, because I'm a little fearful that this information has been presented to you in such an even-handed and reasonable tone that you're missing the alarming point of it. And I think what really got me going when I had a preview of this is, you know, it's easy for us to look at sea level rise as, you know, this is our kids and grandkids' problem. This is going to happen 20, 30, 40 years from now. So what's the big rush? And the work that we've done here shows that may be true in a gross sense, but there are much greater likelihoods that we're going to start seeing storm surges and all kinds of impacts on this bayside infrastructure soon. And just for example, to be completely selfish about it, we are responsible for these toll bridge assets that generate $700 million a year and that are now paying off $9 billion worth of bonds. And we don't have in Brian's financial model that they're going to be out of commission for a couple weeks of the year because people can't get to them. I think we need to do two things. One is we need to start going a lot faster on this subject. And two, I think we need to start approaching it in a much more systematic way. There is a ton of work going on now, but it's being undertaken by 40 different jurisdictions at the local, regional, county level. And I think the time to move from pilot work to systematic work is here. Larry Goldspan and I had a conversation just a few days ago, and we're going to get together soon because we've yet to really have a high-level meeting between our two agencies to look at the whole picture. So I'm not really giving you an answer, but I think you are asking all the right questions. And in the last Plan Bay Area, we had that last chapter, remember, where we said, here's the stuff we didn't quite get to. And this subject was probably at the top of that list. And we can't do the next Plan Bay Area with that being the last chapter again. So that's what we really mean by mainstreaming. That subject has to move into the guts of the plan. And when you look around the bay, obviously we've got a lot of housing clustered near the bay, and we want to put more there in our plan. But most of our major transportation infrastructure, the interstate freeway system, the BART system, the rail system, our airports, all three of them are on the bay. We've got a lot of work to do on this subject, and I think, as I said earlier, we've got to go faster, and we've got to put this together in a much more comprehensive way.
I appreciate that, Steve, because as I see pieces of this, it just seems like so many of these things are in isolation. And from my view, it looks like we're creating a bunch of islands. And
that
I appreciate the system.
That is
absolutely
the risk of the status quo path, is that, look, everybody, when it gets right down to things, it gets down to ownership. If you own something, you're just going to take care of it and care about it and worry about it. You know, we don't own the bridges, but we own the debt on those bridges, so we care about them a lot. So one very near-term step you're going to see, and Andy is working on this, is some budget request for next year in BATA so that we can do some detailed work on those bridges. You know, we've just spent $12 billion making them safer for earthquakes, but if you can't get to them, they don't do us much good.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're going to get that work underway, and we're going to proceed, we and the department. We're the co-owners of those assets, and I think we've got a very strong imperative to protect them.
The other question I had is, are we doing an inventory of all of these facilities? Everything seems to have a lifespan, and so if something's reaching its lifespan, you know, within the next 10, 15 years, it ought to be replaced in an orderly process. And so are we doing that, looking at as we're doing replacements and inventory, and primarily with the transportation system itself, the very things you're talking about, being able to get to the bridges, being able to have this mobility in the region?
We intend to do that. And just to give you another sense, a meeting I recently had with Bijan Sartipi, we were talking about the idea of perhaps seeking some grant funding from the state. The state hands out planning money around California for various things related to transportation. It's usually in little dribs and drabs, you know, $50,000, $100,000. We're thinking of maybe asking the state for $10 million, right? I mean, because if you look at the state of California, sea level rise matters the most right here.
Right.
And in terms of the wealth that is generated for California, you do one of these maps, I think BCDC's done it, and you put Google and Microsoft and Facebook and everybody else down there, they're all in those light blue areas too. And that's a ton of tax revenue for the state. So I think we're going to try to make a case to them that it's a statewide interest to get a more systematic understanding of the public and private infrastructure that's at risk in our region.
I appreciate those comments. Scott, did you have your light on?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, you were first, and then Ann, and then
guess
Jake.
Went out. I'm a little confused because we brought these four agencies together, BCDC, ABAG, MTC, the Air District, and they decided they wanted to work on climate change, and now I see MTC out doing it. So I'm just a little confused at what point and how does the JPC get integrated into this discussion?
Commissioner, I think that's a bit of a misimpression. We are doing some work, but so is ABAG, so is BCDC, and so I don't know about the Air District. Maybe someone can speak up here. The work is being done. I think what I'm expressing to you today is the concern that it is not nearly coordinated enough yet. And the fact is we did this work with BCDC, so we've got a lot of two-way partnerships going on here, and those are as good as far as they go. But I think most importantly, we've got to get the owners of this infrastructure involved. Our four agencies don't own infrastructure next to the bay. Caltrans does. BART does. The airports do. And I think that's the next step we need to take, is to really start engaging those owners in the work that they need to do to protect these assets.
Scott, did you? Is that it?
Thank you for trying to help.
Well, I think you're going to be seeing more and more of this subject at the Joint Policy Committee.
Yeah.
And I think you recall the last discussion we had at that workshop. The one subject area, I think, where we really do hit on all four cylinders with all four agencies is this one. And so I think you will see quite a bit more effort there. But I think we've got quite a bit more work to do so that we're bringing the policymakers something you can really sink your teeth into and not, you know, this is the 14th policy, pilot project
right.
We've done.
Yeah, and I do appreciate your answer, but it does kind of speak to the problem is, you know, there's pockets of people out doing different things, and it would be great if at some point
Exactly. Everything's
brought back together.
Okay, Ann and then Jake.
Just to continue on that subject, first I'd like to thank BCDC and MTC for producing this report and bring it to our attention in a way that we can kind of focus on the problems ahead. And it does seem to me, Jim, you've highlighted one of the major issues, which is how to take responsibility and move ahead in a coordinated way. We know that each municipality and transit agency will not be able to do this on their own, although they would like to be able to if they could. But it's going to require a level of coordination and planning that probably has never been seen before, I think, to make this to make the Bay Area as effective as it can with sea level rise. So I would commend to all of us thinking seriously about how to work regionally on this issue, because the Bay will rise despite what different municipalities do. So I think the work, it would be great if we could be in the building together so we could work really closely. But even if we aren't, we need to make that partnership very effective. Thank you.
Jake?
Yes, Mr. Chair. If I could have slide number 2 up, please. I think this speaks to the concern that Commissioner Haggerty mentioned. It does in fact show all around the Bay the various areas of concern. And so if you're up with us in the North Counties in Solano, Napa, Sonoma, and Marin, you see particularly the State Route 37 analysis. I can tell you, as someone who drives along that particular highway, for example, this morning, that when in the wee car, indeed, Commissioner Haggerty, the wee car is very close to the waterline nowadays, as you have, say, the high tide, and you have the flooding event. Yes, rain has come back to California, and also the projections. And here they are in our Plan Bay Area. And if you go to page 127, you see the map. And not only do you have these areas under the pilot study, but you also have the North Bay all the way around to Solano County, a major series of areas with a major transportation link that's often forgotten about, Highway 37. And for those of you from Marin, that's where a lot of your workers come from as well. So, Mr. Chair, as we move forward, I think this coming together under the JPC and as our plan says, we expect that these will be a prominent feature of the planning strategies of the four agencies over the next several decades, which reinforces the point our executive director just made. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other committee members? Okay. Commissioner Bates.
Thank you very much. I'm just wondering, I don't understand, maybe you could explain to me a little more about the drainage study, I don't understand how that's going to work, what it's all about. I mean, it looks like it's an important thing to do, but can you describe how it works? And how come it's so cheap?
I think this is Carolyn Clevenger with MTC. I'll go ahead and do a quick answer. Because it's just a study, it's much cheaper than building actual infrastructure. So the other adaptation strategies are all infrastructure. But when we started looking at 92, we realized that there was actually just a lack of information for how the water was flowing. So before you actually start developing adaptation strategies, you really need to know where the pathways are. So this would be an analysis, more just a planning and engineering and assessment of where the water is flowing and how, so that it can inform what actual capital infrastructure adaptation strategies you might want to advance.
So is the idea you want to eliminate the soil in that area? I don't understand what the...
No, it's to understand when the water is flowing through all those adjacent assets and the actual 92, where the water is flowing and how, so that you can determine how to best manage that water and build adaptation strategies.
I also think that this issue points out a really significant problem that we have when we conduct this kind of work, is that these are interrelated assets that are owned by a variety of different agencies. And so not one agency owns the drainage infrastructure around the 92. And then you have somebody who owns the drainage infrastructure, and then you have another agency that owns the transportation infrastructure. And so ownership is a critical component of understanding vulnerability, because in many cases, you have an owner of shoreline protection or drainage that isn't the owner of the thing that's going to get flooded. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very important relationship to understand. Yeah. And okay. The drainage study. And you have East Bay Regional Park Districts and folks doing the restoration in that area wondering where the water's coming from.
So, I mean, just so the drainage, are we talking about water coming from the sky coming down, or are we talking about water coming from the Sacramento River coming in, entering the bay? Because I know that there's all this fill that's taking place, all of this because of all the things coming from the mountains, and we're seeing more and more fill, like around around Berkeley, as an example, around the piers. They say that the next few years, everything that's sort of south of there is going to be, there's still going to be so much fill, and it's going to be naturally come down from the mountains, that it's going to have to be dredged and in order to have boating. And so is this drainage coming from, this you're talking about runoff from the various areas. Is that right?
This is water. Yes, this is runoff. It's runoff.
Okay. Well, thank you.
It's more water coming from the hills and the land combined with sea level rise, not so much water coming from like the Sacramento River.
I don't think that the dredging issue is the issue here.
Okay.
Necessarily.
Okay. I was just wondering because what's happened. I know that we think that global warming and the fact that we're going to have sea level rise is a huge problem we have to face in the future. There's no doubt about that. But it's here right now. I mean, look at what's happening with the infrastructure just in this last major storm. And what they tell us now is with the way the climate change is working, that we're going to see more incidents of where the water comes down and drenches in one particular area and over a sustained period of time causes all kinds of problems that need to be addressed. And I guess the San Francisco airport, there were 5-hour delays and you couldn't get there. And you know, all of these things are real economic indicators.
Okay, I don't see any. Oh, Julie? Oh, by the way, I'd like to welcome Julie Pierce from Contra Costa County. She's our newest appointee, and that's one of the reasons you're moving closer to the middle. And so, Julie, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. As I think about this, and we've been talking about this at the Joint Policy Committee and obviously at ABAG as well, but it occurs to me that our CMAs may not be talking about it as much as they need to be. And if we're talking about policies of building these kinds of strategies into everything we do, we probably need to be setting some examples about adopting policies that do that and encouraging our other agencies to do the same. It's a whole lot easier not to build the stuff right now if you don't have to, because it's a whole lot cheaper. But if we don't start putting these things in, I mean, so many of our projects take 20 years to plan and get on the books that we better start putting these in the plans today and these mitigations and making sure we're not building stuff below sea level or what will be the new sea level. So it just occurs to me that we probably ought to be doing a little bit more advocacy throughout, and maybe that comes through the Joint Policy Committee so that it comes from all of our agencies as a united message out to our CMAs and indeed all of our cities to, as you're doing future planning, please incorporate this stuff. This is real, people. It's not pretend.
We agree. And again, I think the CMAs probably are doing more work than you might expect because I think they've been on this page with us for a little bit of time, at least. I continue to be concerned, and in part I'm a little ignorant on the subject, but I continue to be concerned about the owners and what they are up to, because the CMAs don't own things any more than we do. And so I think the important part of this work was having BART involved, having Caltrans involved, and I think we're going to need to pour on more in that subject area especially.
Steve, I don't know if this is possible, but when you look at the stakeholders, you know, you've got counties, you've got cities, you've got these transit properties. I mean, the list goes on and on. Is there a flow chart or some type of organizational chart that's being put together to talk about how we deal with these various levels?
I think Bruce Reardon has probably developed one. So we ought to get back to you on that. The one you didn't mention, which is a complete blank slate to me, is the flood control districts.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know who those guys are. And we've got lots of those. We got mosquito abatement districts in the Bay Area. So we've got a lot of partners that we are just completely unaccustomed to dealing with, that we've got to learn their names and numbers pretty quickly.
Okay. All right. So,
Mr. Chair? Let's see.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Just on the latter point that was just made by our executive director, I have historically advocated for inclusion of water-related matters in Plan Bay Area, noticeably absent from this splendid document with the exception of sea level rise. In terms of CMAs, I give you Sonoma County Transportation Authority and Regional Climate Protection Authority. Under a Strategic Growth Council planning grant, we're developing Climate Action Plan 2020. We've also been working cooperatively with our fellow CMAs in the context of that Highway 37 problem that has already been mentioned. In terms of adaptation, we will be putting on in Sonoma County an adaptation forum this coming year, following on California's adaptation forum of last August, and getting ready for the National Adaptation Forum in St. Louis in May of this coming year. So at least in Sonoma County, I feel that the CMA bunch are digging in and we're active. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Rich Hedges, Rich, you'll wrap this item up.
I just had to say something after listening to your conversation. I heard a lot of comments about the current storm. This was not a horrible storm compared to some that I've been through. After the initial winds, the rain became long. It lasted a long time, but it was fairly gentle in the area where I live, steady but gentle. We had an issue last night, just to give you a little background. Large parts of San Mateo used to flood. This goes back to the early 50s, 40s, 50s, early 60s. Places like Glendale Village, San Mateo Village, the area I live now wasn't developed at the time, but it flooded. The Corps of Engineers dredged a seal slough. We now call it Marina Lagoon, a lot of houses around it. About 15 years ago, high-speed pumps were put in. Well, I was at a neighborhood watch dinner last night, and we had most of the city officials there, myself and another man who started a committee called Marina Lagoon Action Committee. Started getting calls from the neighbors that the water was coming up. So we got folks to listen to us. Turns out that the pumps, because we hadn't had a large rain for 2 or 3 years, a huge amount of debris came down the tributaries and lodged in the pump openings. So we were facing flooding last night, not because of the system was inadequate, because we raised money about 3 years ago and passed a bond election that raised our levies to the FEMA engineering requirements. So the local community did that in a special assessment. But what I think is missing in the conversation today is the activity of people within the community that alert to the city officials to the problems we have. I think we need to rely on those people who are active in the community to help us work this problem through, because there are a number of communities that are watching this with local citizens. I will say that when this happens and our flood basin fills up, then there's a chain reaction, because the creeks can't empty, they back up. The storm sewers back up, they overflow into the sewage, and then that backs up. And we had a little bit of all of that last night, but we got it under control, because we have a good city and good city officials. And our public works director was out there with the rest of the crew, knee deep, trying to clear those pumps. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rich. Okay, with that, we'll move on to item number 6. This is the Regional Advanced Mitigation Plan, RAMP. Ken, are you going to introduce? Is this a new acronym, or has it been around?
It's yet another new acronym for...
Steve, you need to have the acronym of the month map or something. So with that, Ken.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. I'm going to just introduce this item. As you all know, major transportation projects typically require environmental mitigation. Currently in the Bay Area, that is dealt with on a project-by-project basis, which is not always cost-efficient. It may not always provide the maximum environmental benefits. And so for several months, MTC staff has been working with staff from the Nature Conservancy, the State Coastal Conservancy, as well as with CMA staff here in the region, around potentially considering how we might develop a pilot project for a regional approach to pooling mitigation dollars and environmental benefits. And to explain that in more detail, we have Liz O'Donohue from the California chapter of the Nature Conservancy and Matt Gerhart from the State Coastal Conservancy Bay Area Program. And so with that, I will turn it over to Liz.
So thanks, Ken. Again, my name is Liz O'Donohue. I'm with the California chapter of the Nature Conservancy. So the Nature Conservancy and other agencies in the state have been working on this concept of regional advanced mitigation planning. And one place where this could touch down really well is in the Bay Area. So Plan Bay Area was a very innovative plan that really focused on sustainability and regional planning. And so regional advanced mitigation planning could build on this by focusing on this regional look at deploying mitigation in a more sound and effective manner, and also supports the plan's look at environmental conservation, support for environmental conservation. So as Ken said, the status quo is typically very inefficient. Each project, when it's put into place, there's an environmental process, and through that environmental process, there's identified mitigation needs, and then there is, on a project-by-project basis, negotiation with the resource agencies on what the mitigation needs are. And so typically what happens is that it is very inefficient and ineffective. From a transportation perspective, it costs a lot of money, it takes a lot of time, and often this negotiation and then implementation of mitigation results in delayed project delivery. And the costs are expensive because when you do mitigation at the time that it's required, you've lost a lot of time, so the costs have been elevated. And by doing it on a project-by-project basis and resulting in smaller patches of habitat, the cost to implement that mitigation and to manage that mitigation are very expensive. And there's also a lot of risk involved because if you do it later, it's a little unclear whether it's going to be successful. From a conservation perspective, these isolated islands of habitats are disconnected from other larger areas. And so you don't get that ecosystem benefit of allowing for connectivity, carbon sequestration, and other important conservation benefits. And by waiting so long, there are lost opportunities for securing land. Those could be converted to other uses. So by doing this in advance and at a larger scale, you get those efficiencies, and you also deliver better conservation. So this is not a new idea. The trend over the last 10 to 12 years has really been to look at this landscape scale approach to mitigation. There was this report done in 2006 called Ecological by the Federal Highways Administration. And what they looked at is changing the dynamic and rubric of mitigation to look at it from this larger landscape scale perspective. And what they found was that from an infrastructure benefit, it's cheaper, it's faster, there's more certainty and reduced risk. And another key component that was revealed through this report and also, you know, it continues to come up, is this improved relationship with regulatory agencies. When you look at a landscape in advance and you sit down with the regulatory agencies, you typically go from a more adversarial negotiation type to more cooperative, collaborative, how can we work on our joint goals together. From an environmental perspective, It delivers better conservation. It contributes to climate goals in that when you develop larger landscapes connected to each other, you allow for climate adaptation and climate mitigation. And it helps reduce impacts overall at the get-go. So this, about a year ago, the Secretary of Interior, Sally Jewell, issued her first executive order that was to really change the dynamic and look at landscape scale mitigation. And in April of this year, her staff presented to her, and she accepted a report on how to do that. It identified 10 components of how it should be done, and regional advanced mitigation was one of those. And the Department of Interior is now trying to deploy this across the country to change the way things are getting done. I'll just walk you through a brief methodology of how this works. This is an example in the Central Sacramento River area. This is a pilot project that is currently underway with Caltrans and regulatory agencies and DWR at the state level. So on the first map, you see mapping of infrastructure projects, both roads and flood. The second map is an example of where there could be potential occurrences on resources, and on this one, it's Swainson's Hawk. And so you map all of these occurrences not as a definitive but as an expected or predicted occurrence. And then you bubble all those up together, and you end up with a suite of species and potential occurrences. This next map represents a green print. And what this is it overlays conservation plans from 8 different organizations, and that includes state agencies, federal agencies, and conservation organizations. And where the strongest green is, that's where all 8 conservation plans agree. And where the yellow and the red is where there are already protected lands. So you can see how you will want to kind of drive your mitigation to expand those already protected lands. And then the last item is an example, and this hasn't been done yet, but it's an example of where you can run Marksan analyses. This is a computer program that's used throughout the world that could drive you to the least cost and higher conservation outcomes. So as I alluded to, this has strong support throughout both infrastructure agencies and resource agencies, and this report was produced a couple of years ago that gave a pretty high level what, why, and how can RAMP be done throughout the state. So all of these organizations and agencies signed on and supported this document. It remains a draft because it will be revised once this pilot is done. And then this also has been implemented in a couple places in California. One is in San Diego. This is through their sales tax measure that was passed in 2004. And to date, they report that they've secured mitigation for all early action projects in the first year, 6 years of the program. And those projects were supposed to be done over 10 years. And so this has escalated the rate of mitigation. So when those projects are done in the future, they have already checked that box. They've done an analysis, and they've found that the per-acre cost is roughly half of their estimated cost. And in Orange County, they've been engaged since 2006, and they are well underway. They've secured about 1,100 acres of habitat. They have identified their early action projects, focusing on freeway projects. And I include this quote from Daryl Johnson, who's a CEO, who, in addition to the faster and less costly benefits, he talks about the process that has been very helpful in engaging with the public and environmental organizations as well as the regulatory agencies. And I love this little picture on the right-hand side. Transnet is a sales tax measure for transportation, but they really focus on preserving open space for our future. And admittedly, that was helpful in getting it passed, but they still hold on to that. So in the Bay Area, we and other agencies and MTC are interested in bringing this to the Bay Area. And so the goal is to expedite project delivery and achieve meaningful conservation outcomes. As I mentioned, the process is you first estimate the mitigation needs for several planned infrastructure projects. That's been done already for the Bay Area. You drive the mitigation funds to the most productive ecological lands, and you do this all in advance. One, there's a lot of reasons why the Berry is a good place to try this out, but one major reason why it's important is that we have the State Coastal Conservancy as a potential partner. And so with that, I'm going to turn to Matt Gerhardt to give a little bit of an explanation.
Good morning, committee members. Can you hear me? Just want to briefly say hello. We're pleased to be helping support this project. We're really excited for MTC's interest and leadership in trying to pursue it. A couple of the points Liz made, I think, are really salient to us. It's a partnership opportunity, especially for this region, I think, in that, one, we have really invested both on the conservation and the infrastructure side in the type of planning that is necessary to drive a regional approach. It's sort of the comment about piece by piece is not relevant here. We've got large-scale planning that can drive this. A second issue that we've experienced with the Conservancy is this history of mitigation being piecemeal. The delays in time in delivering projects are really significant, and we sit often for up to 10 years on mitigation funds that we can't use effectively. So the mitigate in advance part is truly a huge advantage on the conservation side, and I think the credit that comes from doing a program will hopefully, from achieving those benefits early, will really, I think, in the end work. So we're excited to help and look forward to working.
So over the last year, we've been exploring this idea with CMA's staff, and so we are now at a point where we think that this program can really move in a more intentional way. And I will just close by listing some of the benefits that we hope to achieve in the Bay Area, but also have been demonstrated to have been benefits elsewhere. So just to recap, more efficient and cost-effective mitigation, to advance regional conservation priorities. One thing that Matt mentioned about the large-scale planning that already exists, there is significant data and well-established conservation priorities in the Bay Area, and that's been done through the Coastal Conservancy as well as the Bay Area Open Space Council through a broad-based five-year plan development that's included dozens of organizations. So to be able to turn that into action, I think, would be very positive. It's consistent with Plan Bay Area, as I mentioned before. It would hopefully yield more productive engagement with regulatory agencies. We've done outreach to all the regulatory agencies. They are willing and I should say also sounds eager to participate, because what they see, and Matt alluded to, is this constant kind of bite at another apple, and there's larger scale of how do all these things fit together does not happen today, and so they're eager to see that happen. The Bay Area Parks and Open Space Districts are also very supportive of this effort, and so they're eager to participate. And then I should end on that MTC really has the leadership and innovation, both the CMAs and the region, throughout California. And so I think other organizations are looking to the Bay Area to see how it can be done here. And with that,
how does this compare with the county's HCPs? I mean, how do they fit into this?
A very good question. So in the Bay Area, there are two NCCPs, Natural Communities Conservation Plans, one in Santa Clara and one in Contra Costa, and we have talked with both of them. My sense is that those are really the premier plans in the Bay Area, and they're well underway, and they're working well. So when we develop a region-wide mitigation green print, we will work very closely with them to make sure that, first, that there's nothing that is done in this program that negatively impacts those HCPs or NCCPs. And there are HCPs throughout the region as well, not just the NCCPs. And we have already incorporated that data in the assessment that was done. But secondly, is there a way through this process and through this broader look, there can be actions that can provide that ecological lift and support for those NCCPs and HCPs? So at a minimum, they will be included and there won't be competition. But really, the hope is that by this larger look, it can fold into actually more effective conservation.
So you see those HCPs just kind of rolling into mm-hmm. it, and somebody would do some confirmation that it's consistent with the overall plan. The one thing, though, I have to differ with you, you know, when you say the regulatory agencies are anxious on this, you know, we've gotten so much pushback on the HCPs from them, and they have very diverse opinions, and mm-hmm. there's certain ways they want it that it really doesn't work, and the delays are there. The other question I had is, how does CEQA fit into all of this?
Yes, so CEQA, so this process does not change CEQA in any way. So what happens with CEQA is that CEQA is always done at the project level on the project itself. And so one benefit to this is that this broad-scale planning is done in advance in the future. And so when these estimates on mitigation needs are done, those are really estimates, because CEQA really goes deeper, requires the agencies to go deeper and do much more intense analysis. All right. So that will occur at the back end, but through CEQA there is a mitigation process.
What
this does from a timing perspective is when they get to that mitigation process, they can go back and check that box and say, are those mitigation needs provided? Yes, we provided them in the past. Okay, let's move ahead.
Okay, and my last question, and I'll move out of the commission.
Chair Spearing, I just wanted to, it's Ken over here. Right here. I also just wanted to jump in and just clarify that, you know, part of the reason this is coming to you all today is because we have been doing work on this, and we thought it was important to check in with the decision makers for the agency before we went much further. The next step in the process will be to have a technical advisory committee that will deal with some of the questions that we don't have answers for today. You know, is this dealt with at a sub-regional level or a series of sub-regional levels here within the Bay Area, or is it truly at a regional scale? What is the particular role of MTC? What is the potential partnership with the State Coastal Conservancy, which we have had a good working relationship with in the past? There's a number of issues we need to work through, but we think we have a good basis to move forward and ask some of those questions and then come back to you in 2015, hopefully with some good answers to those questions and perhaps a path forward that could inform the update of Plan Bay Area in 2017.
Okay, I just want to encourage, Ken, that you get the county planning agencies involved in this process and get them involved early, because I really like the direction this is going, but if it's not on a regional basis, if there's a high density project in either San Francisco, Oakland, or something that needs some mitigation, and there's opportunities to do it in the outlying counties that have, you know, quite a bit of capacity, that should happen, and it can help facilitate some of these projects. But you know, everybody sitting up here at this table has had such a frustration with these agencies and delays in our projects. Those costs are running up. And, you know, at the end of the whole process, really the original mitigation is probably what we ended up with. And so if we can streamline this whole process, I think it's worth millions of dollars.
Kenny Cow, to my right, has been meeting regularly with the CMA project delivery folks, and we've had discussions with the planning directors as well. So that's that'll be folded into the TAC going forward.
But just get the county resource agencies or county plan, because they're dealing with these HCPs, and they're trying to put them together in my county, for instance, for all seven cities. And so they're the people that are coordinating it. So make sure they're in the room.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Alicia, you're up.
Thank you.
Denny.
Thank you for your report. The benefits, I think, are very positive. But I know, as looking through both the San Diego and Orange County, what were some of the challenges that organizations like us need to know about that we might avoid if we plan to work on something in the Bay Area besides the benefits? What were some of the areas that I think, and it follows with Commissioner Spearing's comments on the challenges with the counties and the local agencies?
Yes, very good question. So I would really focus on three things. One is the regulatory involvement. So as Commissioner Spearing just said, it's been difficult. But I think that, so what happens is typically at the policy level, you know, the director level, the secretary level in Sacramento, as well as the Secretary of Interior, they all say it should happen. It's what happens at the district that is difficult. And it's because those staff are charged with their extremely long list of things to do, and thinking outside of the box or spending time doing something different from that is often very difficult. So when you talk to the San Diego folks or the Orange County folks, that was a challenge. The way that is often approached is to really start early and get them around the table, and this technical advisory committee process really intends to do that, to get the buy-in early, to understand what their needs are, to get them thinking out of the box. And we have done briefings with all of those agencies. They've tasked somebody locally to sit on this technical advisory committee. And ultimately, what you want to do is you want to have these agreements that that give comfort to the infrastructure agencies, the CMAs or MTC, Caltrans or others, that what happens in the future will consider what's happened in the past. And while the Bay Area is not San Diego or Orange County, we benefit from those signed agreements that have gone before. And so we'll be taking a look at those to see if those meet those needs. The second challenge is funding. How will the funding work? In those counties, they had one sales tax measure, and so they were able to really attach this process to a one sales tax and the funding flow from that. In the Bay Area, it's more than one county. It has different funding flows, and so how will that work? And so through the process and the TAC, I think we'll figure that out. And then the third thing, I think, is just capacity and culture. And on both sides of the equation, I think that is also, it just takes time to build trust, build collaboration, and understand that both sides can get a lift through this process.
Thank you.
Amy?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I just want to thank staff and our partners from the community for this presentation. I really think that the benefits of this program are going to be phenomenal. I know a number of counties have put together habitat protection plans. In Contra Costa County, we've had a very positive, productive relationship with the Park District and with organizations like Save Mount Diablo to create these the districts. And part of the frustration is, in fact, taking it to that next step, identifying mitigations in advance. So when all of our counties are doing investment plans, we have these habitat opportunities in place. And the other thing is where you have the opportunity where the people that are paying the bills are able to benefit, or the habitat that's impacted by a particular investment is able to benefit from the money being spent locally. And I think it's really compelling to see the experience in San Diego that that they've been able to reduce those costs significantly. And ultimately, the money goes into the habitat restoration, not the discussion and dialogue and push and pull getting to it. It's also really helpful to hear your response to Commissioner Geary's questions about what are some of the challenges going forward and how can we, overcome those, and particularly, working together, both the local agencies as well as the regional and federal agencies. I'm hopeful that the findings that have come out of the federal, Department of Interior saying this is a priority for ours, hopefully we'll be able to help us in that. So I just think it's an excellent program. I think as our counties are looking at additional revenue measures, sales tax, this enables those counties to be able to look proactively in terms of reducing the costs for infrastructure investment through programs like this. So I think that the plan, too, to keeping working closely with the CMA as well as bringing in the resources agencies in the technical advisory committee moving forward makes a lot of sense. And also the concept of integrating it into the next step of our regional planning process, I think it can be very helpful. So thank you.
Julie, and then Mark.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm glad to hear that you have reached out to the other habitat conservancies around the Bay Area. As one of the members cities of one of those agencies, the East Contra Costa County Habitat Conservancy, which has been in place for many years now, very successfully, it has helped to streamline not only housing development, but the expansions of Highway 4 East tremendously. It's just been a ready resource for us to use, and the land was already identified. It's all mapped out, and that was part of it. And you know, we didn't have the benefit of a sales tax agency or something to get it started, so we assessed each of the individual cities to establish the agency. But as the smallest member of that, I can say it was a worthwhile investment. And I think you really need to bring those folks to these meetings because they've got a tremendous amount of information about going through the process and how they actually got it established, the nuts and bolts of how to get it done, because they've been very, very successful. So thank you very much for that.
Mark?
So I know what I like. We ABAG gave an award to Santa Clara for their conservation planning effort that helped developments do their mitigations more cost-effectively, and I like that approach. I guess I'm trying to understand how this fits into what's already being done. So are we talking about regional mitigation plan specifically for transportation, or is this more broad, like most of the Santa Clara case, where you're talking about any development, any type of mitigation, any project that could look to a way to have a more regional impact with their mitigation dollars? And so maybe you can explain that.
So this effort is focused on transportation, and it brings together transportation from all the agencies, not just one agency or another agency. Part of this project, though, is in putting together a region-wide, what we're calling a mitigation green print. And what that is it takes the Conservation Lands Network, that was that process I mentioned before, and takes a look at it, updates it, and also brings in other data that might not be represented today at an effective level, like wetlands data, that would represent mitigation needs for all the projects. So that mitigation green print could serve really any purpose. But for this effort, it's focusing on transportation. Part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at this data region-wide, standardize the needs. When you sit down with, like, the Army Corps, for example, they have their data set that they need to have in order to allow and agree for mitigation, and currently that's not at that level. So hopefully we'll have this kind of standardized map of mitigation needs that can relate to whatever is needed. But for this effort, it's really focused on transportation.
Okay. Jake?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking at the Regional Advanced Mitigation Planning Statewide Framework, and on their website it says that the final document was supposed to be approved this year. I didn't hear whether you had reported that that had happened or not. Or it didn't penetrate anyway.
So it's draft, and it is staying draft for now. There are some holes in that document that need to be filled. There's some proposals in there that need to be test-driven. And so I expect that it will be picked up and looked at again in a couple of years once the Sacramento River pilot area is done and other pilots, including with potentially high-speed rail, are concluded.
The reason I bring this up is it talks in the draft about the creation of regions, and I presume for us to get the full-scale benefit, as someone who has dealt with the California tiger salamander and the Santa Rosa plain area with the various agencies involved, I'm lacking a habitat conservation plan. I'm well aware of the complexities here, and when I see the array of federal and state agencies that have to agree on this, then I must say that I wish everybody well. But the creation of our region as a RAMP, if I may commit that acronym, does that have to wait until the draft is finalized, or can we go ahead and be aggressive and form our own RAMP?
Yeah. So that document had this proposal to kind of organize these things from a statewide perspective. Where are the right projects? Where are the right conservation? Then draw those. That was one of the things that was kind of a straw proposal. So the state is moving ahead, but in kind of a slower manner. And one of the opportunities here is to also focus on a region to help inform what the state is doing, and the state work group is well aware of what's happening here. In fact, I briefed them last week. And so they're very excited to participate where this region is and where this effort is going. I suspect we will work with them to get help and maybe advice, but we don't have to wait for that. It can work both ways.
Well, Mr. Chair, anything that we can do to avoid the situations that each of ourselves finds ourselves in, the Smart Rail Project being one where we aggressively purchase mitigation lands and then find ourselves literally and figuratively in a morass with the permitting agencies. Anything that can resolve that, we know we would applaud.
And okay.
We wish everybody well.
Mark, you're not, your light's still on. Did you want to comment again?
Okay. All right, so before I adjourn, Steve, if we can adopt something like this and we do a regional measure, you're going to have a whole bunch of landowners that's had land that they could never develop anything on. They've never had any hope for it, and they are now becoming millionaires, you know, selling these mitigation banks. And so I think we'll have a new a group of contributors to our regional campaign. So with that, I have no cards for public comments, and so this meeting's adjourned. Thank you all for the discussion this morning.